Of Daf Mem Gimel Amid Aleph, and we're continuing with the Kash of Abaye against Rava, against Rav Chisda, at least in terms of the way Rabban interpreted Rav Chisda. Kofin Kara Al Haner Shalo Yochez Bakora. So you're allowed to turn a bowl on its other side, to turn around and put it on top of a nair so that the fire should not reach a beam, a korah. Now, the beam itself is muksa, it's part of a structure. And now we're talking about a hatsola, which lechora is hatsola sheina mitsuya. We said that you're not allowed to move something that's not muksa for the sake of something that's muksa in case of hatsola sheina mitsuya. So why then are we allowed to move this kara in order to protect the fire that might come out of the korah? This is not motzui, that the house would go up in flames because of the nair. Hagemara answers, bebote gechine, deshchichi budleika. So we're talking about batim nemuchim, low houses, and the light is close to the beams, to the roof, because the roof is not that high up, not that tall. And therefore, shchichi behu dleika, it's quite common that a fire could break out because of the proximity between the lamp and the ceiling. Gemara further asks from a Mishnah later on, v'chein korah. We're talking about a korah shebagag, a beam in the ceiling. Shenishbro, it broke on Shabbos. Somchin osa besafsal ubaruchos hamita, which means zokvin tachas hakorah hashvuro lahachzik shalotipo. So we're allowed to take something and move it in order to support the korah that shenishbro. We could take perhaps a couch or sideboards of a bed. You know, the bed was made up of different pieces of wood in the frame. So there's sideboards. And once again, we're talking about the breakage of a beam. That's not exactly common. That's not predictable. And yet the Mishnah allows moving a bench, or for that matter, bed, to support the broken beam. So you're moving something that's not muksa for the sake of muksa, which is a hatsol sheina mitsuya. It's not something that you could have predicted. And the Gemara answers, b'kshurei. Now, what does the word kshurei mean? Kshurei chadita. Kshurei are koros, are these beams. Chadita means they're new. And they're not yet strong. Lo nivdak choskan. We don't know really whether they're strong or not. Davidi de pake. And until we know that they're strong, we have to suspect that maybe they won't be strong. And they could break because of the heaviness of the house, the weight of the house. And that makes it into a hatsola mitsuya. And he has a footnote here in the name of Rashi, that liacha tiveich hagag betit, is motzi she koros hagag adayin lo nivdak choskam v'nishboros mikovid masa hatit. So it's quite common that in the case of these new, untried and untrue, untested beams, they often break because of the COVID and the heaviness of the tit, of the cement that rests on top of these koros and tries to keep them in place. Now the Gemara offers another explanation as to why you're not allowed to put a kli under the nair in our Mishnah, or under a hen to catch the tarnagolas. Rav Yosef Amar Hani Tamid Rav Chisda Mishum Nekom Evatel Kli Mehei Chano. That by placing the kli in a way that the shemen is going to drip into the kli, or the beitzah is going to fall into the kli, you're taking a kli which is mutabitiltal, and you're making it into a kli that's also a tiltal. Yagorim, an Isur Tiltul, and an Isur Shtamshus in a Kli that was Muchan, that was Royal Shemesh entering into Shabbos. Because once the Beitza falls into this Kli, or the oil drips into the receptacle, that becomes Muktza. However, if you are covering the Beitza in order to protect it, then Rav Chisda was Matir. And the reason for that is because he's not being mevatel kli meichano, and as he can still take the kli that he overturned, the bowl, the upside down bowl, and he can move it at any moment that he wants for any purpose that he needs it. So he wasn't mevatel this shem hachana of this kli. Eis ve'abaya, Abaya asks Rav Yosef from the Braisa. Chavish shel tevel shenishbara. Remember, we had this in the last year, that if you had a chavish, a barrel full of tevel, and it broke on Shabbos, and the Braisa permits you, maybe kli acher, miniach tachter, you're allowed to put a kli underneath the chavish shel tevel shenishbara and receive the contents that's falling out of the kli. And this is difficult according to Rav Yosef, because tevel is mukta. And the very moment that the tevel is going to fall out of the barrel into the kli is going to become also betiltel. So he's being mevatel lachanas kli. How could this be mutter to be mekabel tevel? Amaleis, Rav Yosef responds to Abaye, that's not difficult. Why? Tevel muchan hu etzel Shabbos. The status of tevel is such that it's considered muchan. Again, when we say muchan, I think it's a relative term. It's more muchan than other mukta. Shekein. Why isn't it mukta mitzad atzmo? It's only mukta mitzad that the Chachomim said it's mukta. You're not allowed to be mafresh maser on Shabbos. That's a rabbinic injunction. V'yim avar v'tikno. If let's say he was mafresh truma, mafresh maser, to be attacking the peros against the law, and he violated the isud rabbanon of hafrashas maser b'shabbos mitukon, they didn't undermine the act and the validity of the act of Afrasha. And in such a case, the tevel would now become mutu b'achila, and if it's mutu b'achila, it's mutu b'tiltol. And we don't have to be choshesh for an isur mukta. And therefore here also, in the case of the barrel that broke it has tevel in it, even though he wasn't mafrish, he was a good boy, he wasn't mafrish, so it's real tevel, but nevertheless, Einu mevatel v'yosus ha'kli she'tachtov. That's not going to generate an iser on the kli below it. And in Mirza Hashem, we're going to try to figure out why that is so. So that, let's just clarify the following. We're talking about a heter in which tevel is something that's muchan etzel Shabbos, meaning that even though l'chatchila you're not allowed to be mafrish, but if you were mafrish, then it would be a valid afrasha. So the status of muktzah with regard to tevel is not the same as real muktzah in a sense, because real muktzah is migu diskatzah ben hashrosh. Once it was muktzah entering into the Shabbos, it remains muktzah for the entire Shabbos, even if you would remove the sibas hamuktzah. But here, in the case of tevel, if you were to be mafresh on Shabbos itself, then it would no longer be muktzah. We do not apply the principle of migu diskatzoi, and that indicates it's a different type of muktzah, and it's a kind of muktzah where if you move a kli for the sake of that muktzah, for the sake of that tevel, that's not going to be mevatel the kli meichano. Now, the question that we have to ask is, what are we doing in this case of tevel, according to Rav Yosef, with the principle of migu diskatzoi lemein hashmosh diskatzoi lekuli yoma? If it was also betiltul, and it had the status of mukta when we entered into Shabbos, even though now the reason for it being mukta has been removed, he was mafresh tevel, once it was also b'knisa Shabbos, it remains mukta for the balance of Shabbos. So how do we understand that tevel, even if he goes ahead and he violates the Isur D'Rabbanan, we're going to reward him, so to speak, and he's going to be able to not only create a valid tikkun, and the hafrosh is valid, but on top of it, we're going to remove an isur mukta. So the Achronim really get into this, and it could be that according to, and we're going with Rashi's pshat in the sugya, there's no din of migudus katsoi with regard to an isur drabbanon. And since the isur hafrosh's truma and maaser is only on Shabbos is only drabbanon, therefore we suspend the principle of migudus katsoi. Alternatively, maybe we have two dinim of muksa. We have one din of muksa mamish, and then we have another din of an isur tiltul. And the nafkamina is that isur tiltul on the chayfetz will not reflect on the chayfetz itself. It's kind of like an isur gavra, and therefore the other kli will not be impacted by the tevel in this case. Esve Abaye. Just one second, make sure we got the right place over here. Just one second. I think we may have skipped something. He's asking now from the Mishnah. Vaita, the Mishnah says, Nosim kli tachas hanel kabel nitzotzos. Now, these nitzotzos, we said in yesterday's discussion, are mukta. And now, if he's putting a kli, which is mukhan, under a ner, which is, and now he's going to be mekabel nitzotzos, then he's being mevatel kli meichano amar Rav Huna b'rei Rav Yeshua nitzotzos ein behem mamish. And even these nitzotzos, which are, there's nothing substantive to them, nothing tangible, and therefore when they fall into the kli remains muchan, remains mutal tiltal. So there's no bitul kli meichano. And that's because the nitzotzos don't have that chashivus. They don't have a substance. They're not tangible, as we said before. Now the Gemara is going to ask from a Mishnah in Beitza, Noslim Kli Tachas Hadelef B'Shabbos. So if you have a leaking, let's call it rain that leaks through the ceiling, and you want to put a vessel there to collect that rain, then we have a problem because leaking water is considered mukta, and now he's moving a kli which is not mukta, litzorech the water, the rainwater that's mukta, and then he's going to be mavata the kli meichano. So Gemara answers, derafi, when he puts it there, berifayon. Berifyon velo mahadko dibay shakale. If he wants, he can take it away on Shabbos. Let's just see what we have over here. I think we skipped something. Let me just make sure. So Tevel we says is muhantin. It's also we says zebo mamish. Then we had the Korah Shenishbara. So forget about the Mishnah of Beitza for just 1 minute. We'll come back to the Mishnah of Beitza of Delev. But first we'll talk about Korah Shenishbara. We're familiar with this Mishnah. We had it before. Somchenosa besavsola baruchos hamita. So you have this beam in the ceiling that's broken. Has the status of mukta. And now you're going to support it with a non-muksa item, like a couch or a bed. So aren't you being mevatel the kli mehechano? This is against Rav Yosef. And the Gemara answers, derafi, that he doesn't tighten them. That's when the Mishnah allows you to put a bench, a couch there, that's only berafi if he leaves it berifayon, kind of loosely. V'enim ahadko, he doesn't tighten it. D'boy shokele, that if he wants to, he can take it away from there on Shabbos. So it's not mevatel kli meichano. So again, what it seems is if that he puts that couch really tight, in such a way that it fits in, you know, as a smicha to support this broken beam in a very tight way, that's considered mevatel kli beichanu. But if he's not doing it tight, then it's not considered mevatel kli meheichanu. Then we get to the Mishnah Beitzah that we mentioned before. We put a vessel under leaking rainwater on Shabbos. And l'chora, why you're allowed to do that? It's again mevatel kli meheichanu. And the Gemara answers, Rav Yosef's answer will be delef haroi. They were talking about leaking water that is drinkable, and it's not muktzah. In other words, it's not coming through the filth, you know, of the ceiling, and it still has the status of drinkable water. And that's called delef harot. Another Mishnah, also later on in the Masechta Kofin, we're allowed to turn over es hasal lifnei hafrochim, and we're talking about a basket in front of young birds, and this will allow them, they should be able to go up into their coop or come down from their coop. We're giving them a kind of a step. And this is against Rav Yosef, because these afrochim, right, these young chicks are mukta. And yet you're moving a kli, which is mukhan, in order to serve mukta. Now what's going to happen is that when the afrochim, which are mukta, will stand on this receptacle, this basket or whatever you put there, then it's going to generate an iser mukta, an iser tiltul, with regard to the kli, with regard to the sal, and that's considered mevatel kli meheichano. How could it be mutta to do such a thing? And this is an explicit Mishnah. So again, what we're saying now is that the birds are mukta, and once you allow them to climb onto the basket, that's going to be mevatel lekli meichano. How could the Mishnah permit it? And kasava, the Gemara answers, kasava mutal taltalo, that you're allowed to move this basket. Right, this, we'll call it a sal, even after the birds climb on top of it. Maybe it means that while they're on top of the basket, you're not letting move the basket. But after the birds climb off the basket, then you're allowed to move the basket, and therefore it's not considered being mevatel kli meheichano. So the Gemara asks, wait a minute, for Sanya, we have a brisa, also l'taltalo, that the basket that you put in front of the efrochim is subject to the isur tiltal. So that's a kasha on Rav Yosef. So the Brisa explicitly says that you're not allowed to move the basket after you set it up as a stepping ladder for the frochim. And how can then we allow you to put the sal there in that place? You're being mevatel meicholo. So the Gemara answers, no, the Brisa didn't mean to prohibit moving the sal. And in Enochinami, when the birds get off the basket, you're allowed to move the basket. However, when the Brisa says you're not allowed to move the basket, that's only be Odon Olaf. That's when the Afrochim are actually, shall we say, perched on the basket, stepping on the basket. So it's only a temporary kind of isur tiltul. So the Mishnah is going to allow you to put the basket in front of the efroch, in front of these birds, because after the birds get off, they jump off the basket, you're allowed to move the basket. So that's not called bitul kli meichano. It's like only a temporary situation. Now the Gemara asks, Bartani, we have another brisa that says that this basket in front of the birds, afal pisha, ain odin olav os, or even after the birds climb down from the basket, the basket is still osu betiltul. Once it became osu betiltul, how then, according to Rav Yosef, can the Mishnah allow you to put the basket there? You're being mevatel kli mechano, om Rabbi Avo. The brisa that says you're not allowed to be metaltel the sal even after the birds jump off, that's only be odon olav kol ben hashmoshos. That's a scenario in which the birds were on top of this basket during the entire period of ben hashmoshos, and in such a case, you're not allowed to move the basket even after the birds climb down. And why is that? Because migudis katzol ben hashmoshos katzol l'kul yom. That since it was muktzah going into Shabbos, it remains muktzah for the entire balance of the Shabbos, even after the birds jump off the basket. However, if the efrochim, if these birds never were on the sal to begin with during ben hashmoshos, or if they were on the sal, maybe it was only for a minute, but not during the entire course of ben hashmoshos, then the basket is not osur unless the afrochim are actually on top of the sal. So the mishnah that allows you to place the basket in front of the birds, that's a case where he puts the basket under the birds after Shabbos entered. And in such a case, he's allowed to take the basket when the afrochim, the birds, are not on top of the basket. So that's not considered bitul kli mehechano. So it means that when the isa tiltul emerges on Shabbos, it's only a temporary kind of isa tiltul. And paradoxically, dafka on Shabbos, we could be more makil as far as the sisa tiltul, and it's not considered vato klime chon if we take the basket and we place it there in front of the afrokim to allow them to climb up and down. Now, basically, we've come to a conclusion of this whole discussion about Rav and Rav Yosef, their different alternative explanations for Rav Chisda. And now the Gemara goes ahead and quotes another opinion who actually argues against Rav Chisda. It's a different Amora. And that's Om Rabbi Yitzchak, Kishem Shein Notlim Kli Tachas Tarnagolas Akalu Beit Sasa, Kachin Kofen Olea Kli Bishvil Shalot Tishaveh. Whereas Rav Chisda said that we have a fundamental distinction, you're not allowed to place a vessel under a hen to receive the egg, but you're allowed to cover or invert the vessel in order to, and put it on top of the egg in order to guarantee that it will not be crushed, not be broken. Comes along Rav Yitzchak and he says, no, we're not going to accept this distinction. And just like we're not allowed to put a kli in a place, in a location to receive the egg, so too we're not allowed to put the kli on top of the egg in order to protect it. And the Gemara explains Rav Yitzchak's thinking. Because Savar ain kli nitel el dovra nitel b'shavis. That the problem here of Rav Chisda is that you can't take a kli that's not muktzah and move it for the sake of something that's muktzah. And that be the case, it makes no difference whatsoever whether you put the kli there to receive the egg as it rolls down, or you put the kli on top of the egg to protect it. In both cases, you are moving the kli for the sake of something that's enonitel, that's osu betiltul, namely the beitzah, which we said is muktzah. So meisvei kol hani tyuvta. Now we can ask all the kashas on Rav Yitzchak from all the mishnayos and the brises that seem to indicate that for the sake of hatzolah mitzuya, you're allowed to be metaltel it. Vishani betzarach lemekomo. And we can defend Rav Yitzchak by saying that in all those mishnayos and the brises, when he's taking a kli from a certain position, a certain location, and the reason he's doing so is because he needs that location to be panui, to be free, and then you're allowed to be metaltel. And once he picks up the kli, then he can put it down wherever he wants. So that's called the special and very fundamental heta called Tzorech Mekomo, where he needs the space. So all the Mishnayos and all the Brises that we've been teaching, we've been learning, is once he handles the non-mukzer item, he's allowed to deposit it wherever he pleases, put it down wherever he wants, even a location where it will benefit a mukza item. But to move a non-mukza item for the sake of a mukza item, that we will not allow. The Gemara now raises a kasha on Rabbi Yitzchok from a braisa. Achas. Beitza shenolda v'shavas v'achas. Beitza shenolda v'yontiv e'metaltilin. Lo l'chasospa es hakli. So you're not allowed to use the egg as a support. You have to know the physics of it, how this egg would support the legs of a bed, and not to cover up the opening of a kli, like to substitute for a lid over a kli, but you're allowed to cover this beitza with a kli in order that it shouldn't break. And according to Rav Yitzchok, who says that tiltil kli litzarch mukta is asur, how could we possibly be matir tiltil kli in order to turn it upside down and cover the beitza, which is mukta? So more answers, Hachinami should tzorech limkomo. So again, when we're taking an egg that we said would not be allowed to move it for the sake of covering the mouth of a utensil or supporting the legs of a bed, but you're allowed to take a different vessel and cover over the egg with that vessel in order to protect the vessel. And Gemara again wants to give the same answer. The Mishnah is referring to a case where he needs the place occupied by the vessel for some other purpose. So once he's allowed to move the vessel for whatever purpose, he's allowed to put it on top of the egg. Let me just see. Yeah. Toshma, we have another price. A person machtzolos al gabi avonim b'shabbos. So machtzolos is a mat, and he's allowed to use the mat and spread it over stones on Shabbos to protect them from what it might be, the rains or the hot sun. And the braisa allows you to move the mats for the benefit of stones. Stones are mukta. How is this possible? And the Gemara answers, ba'avonim mikurzolos, dechazi lebeis hakise. So these are pointed stones, which are suitable for use in the outhouse. And that's what they used back in the day instead of toilet paper. They didn't have toilet paper. So the question is, how are you allowed to use the mats and move them over to the stones? And the answer is, the stones themselves are not mukta. Toshma, we have another brayse, person maktosa gabi levenim b'shabbos. So you're using the mats to protect the bricks from the elements. And the bricks themselves are certainly mukta. And the Gemara answers, de ishtiyu mi binanai. These were leftover bricks after the construction of a building. The chazil mizgalay, when we use it very often as a seat, as a bench to sit on. Toshma, another brayse. So parsa maktels al gabi kavores dvorim b'shabbos. You'll have to use the mat to cover a beehive. B'chamav neachamav gshom neachshom v'vachalis kamin lotzud. So he might protect the beehive either from the hot sun in the summer months or from the rain in the rainy months, as long as he doesn't have kavana to trap the bees. He's going to spread a mat over the bees to protect the bees, but not for the purpose of capturing the bees. So once again, he's moving something that's not mukta for the sake of something that is mukta in order to protect it. Hachamayaskina, Gemara answers, the ika dvash. There's honey in the beehive. And since the honey is not mukta, then when he's allowed to move the mat in order to spread it out and protect the honey, to protect the beehive, because it's got honey in it. Amalei Rav Ukva mimeshon l'Rav Ashi tenach b'yamos hachama. Now that could be a good explanation during the summer months, Ika Dvash, when there's honey in the beehive and you're protecting the honey. But b'yamos hagishamim d'leka Dvash ma'ika l'meimar. In the winter months there's no honey in the hive, so how are you allowed to move the mat to protect the hive? You can't tell me that you're doing it for the sake of protecting the honey. And the honey's not mukta, and therefore it's mukta, but here there is no honey, so you're left with the beehive itself, which is mukta alone. It's called osan shtei chalos. But rather, we're talking about a case of two honeycombs that were left in the hive during the winter season to sustain the bees. So since the honey is edible, a mat may be used to protect it. So let's just read the note over here. He says, Harei v'braisa nemeshe porsim achtel sal kaveres v'cham necham v'gisham 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 v'choref, and yet it is moving something for the sake of mukta. Maybe the dvash. He's doing it to protect the dvash. So I don't know why I don't see the word bidvash here in this particular translation. I'm not sure. I'm going to say tenach v'yamos hachama. Oh, now the dvash is coming out. And here we're on daf mem gimel and beis. And the dvash, the kedvash, that's not mukta, but the most hagshamim, the lekad dvash, is Michael and Meimar. How is Rabbi Yitzchak going to explain the brisa? The brisa is allowing you to take the mats, be metal to them, even during the winter months. There's no dvash in the honeycomb, and yet you're allowed to do it for the purpose of the dvorim, of the bees. And the bees are mukta. And his shita is that you're not allowed to be metaltel a kli for the purpose of mukta. So how do you understand this case of the dvorim, which are mukta? How can you be matted till to kli the machtelas l'tzorech mukta? That's where we got stuck. Lo nitzcha el Osan shtei chalos shel dvash and ish'oros bekaveres hapimos hagsham. Ah, it's like a vestige, a residue of dvash that was left in the honeycomb even during the winter months. And therefore it's not osur, and he's not moving a kli for the purpose of mukta. I pour some akhtelos, the mats to cover this book, but rather there's dvash in the kaveres. So the Gemara asks the kasha v'ha muktzos ninhu. These chalos, these honeycombs, are muktzos for the purpose of the dvarim, of the bees in the hive, the asuros betiltul. So how do we understand this? Well, the honeycombs are muktos because they're left in the hive for the bees' use. So how are you allowing him to move the mat in order to protect them? Nimtzah shkala, nimtzah kaveres. You know, it's everything inside the the hives, whether it's the bees or the two honeycombs, they're all mukta. How can the Braisa allow you, therefore, to move the mat for the purpose of protecting these hives? And the Rabbi Yitzchak himself says, you know, that'll be metal to something that's off mukta. And the Gemara answers, the chashiv alay. On Erev Shabbos, he thought he would eat from the two chalos, from these two honeycombs. And since it's now omid lachilus odom, it's not mukta. So since these two, you know, these two honeycombs are, well, I lost the place for a second, since on Erev Shabbos Choshev Sheyochal Mishtei Achalos, and therefore he says the Omei Lachi L'Sadei Demuktzah Mi'achar Shehosan Shtei Achalos Nitolos, since you're allowed to move the two Achalos, is Mutal Litol Kli L'Tzarkon. So the Gemara says, what do you mean? That's what the Braisa is talking about, a case. It was Matir to cover this Kaveris because he was Choshev Alayu. Halo Choshev Alayu, the simple reading of the Braisa certainly indicates that Lo Choshev Alayu. He didn't think about eating the honey. My Asur, if you're going to tell me that it was that it, only in Choshev Alayu it's mutter to move the mats, but if your implication is Lo Choshev Alayu didn't think about eating the dvash, then it would be Asur. Ihochi, how are you going to read? How are you going to read the Hemshech HaBraisa? Hadetani, it says in the Braisa, Bavachal Yiskavein Lotzud, that he has to make sure that he's not trying to capture the bees. So why did the Braisa make this distinction between whether he has Kavanah Lotzud, he doesn't have Kavanah Lotzud, Liflog V'Lisli V'Dida, first he should have, before he stretches his arm out to the question of Kavanah Lotzud, the Braisa should have been mechalik in the following way. When do we allow you to take these mats and cover the beehives? That's only kshechishev aleim, when he knows his dvash inside and he has in mind to eat the dvash. Have a lo kshechishev aleim asur. And the Gemara answers, hakamash von shafal pi shechishev aleim bilvad shlo yiskavin lotzud. The Braisa is missing a piece over here. It's talking about shechishev aleim. But even if chishev aleim, we have another issue here, not a muksa issue, but something more fundamental, and that is the isur tzeda. So he has to make sure that he doesn't have in mind violating the isur tzeda. So this leads us to mani. And this is where we're going to stop for today. Mem Gimel Amid Beis. And we're about, shall we say, 9 lines down from the top of the page. The first word in the line is Ubilvad. And we're up to Mani. And we're going to try to figure out who is the author of the Braisa that allows you to take these mats and cover the beehives. And we might have an issue here about Dovah Sheni Miskavi, the Machlokas from Shimon Rav Yehuda, and Belineta will cover that during Chol HaMoed. I want to take this opportunity to wish everyone a Chag Kosher V'Sameach.